This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 in the morning. It's Monday, the 3rd of October. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Xiaoning and Philip. And in the meantime, let's cast our eyes to North Asia. The last week of September was pretty eventful for political, economic, and security observers of the region. In Japan, a state funeral was held for late Prime Minister Shinzo Abe amid widespread public opposition to the event. The state funeral is estimated to cost over $11 billion at a time when the Japanese are feeling the pinch of rising inflation.
Fumio Kishida's government also intervened for the first time since the 1990s to prop up the Japanese yen, which at one point dropped to its lowest level against the greenback in 24 years. Meanwhile, U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris paid visit to Japan and South Korea, and North Korea retaliated by deciding to give its own welcome by carrying out four ballistic missile launches. You're welcome. Triggering concerns that a nuclear test is in the works.
They did the same thing when President Joe Biden visited Japan as well. Or visited the region. So this seems to be a kind of, you know,
It's like a very unhealthy water cannon.
And you know how powerful you are when you get this. So if you go and visit Korea and you don't get any ballistic missiles, then yeah, maybe
well,
not so powerful.
One anyway in the first place.
Well, for some insights into what all these developments mean, we have on the line with us William Pezek. He's a columnist with Nikkei Asia. He's also a journalist based in Tokyo. William, good morning. Thanks as always for joining us. So I'd like to start with the state funeral for the late former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. It did become a point of controversy for the Japanese public. Why was there public outcry over the event?
Well, I think a few things. I think that the Japanese public was, you know, the way that Prime Minister Abe died was terrible, and it created a lot of public sympathy. But I think that his ruling party, backfired for them because they forgot that Abe was actually a very polarizing and in the end, a very unpopular prime minister. He stepped down amid a variety of scandals. I think also people were upset that there was this massive, expensive, opulent funeral that was held for Abe. But when a previous prime minister, who many feel was more impactful historically, Prime Minister Nakasone, he was the 1980s prime minister. He died in 2019, no state funeral. And I think finally, I think people are upset that the ruling party has kind of refused to investigate the conditions of Abe's assassination. There's this weird religious group that seems connected to it, and the ruling party has kind of, they've tried to sweep it under the tatami mat. So that's backfiring on them.
Okay, let's do a little bit of a channel check on Fumio Kishida's government overall. How does the public view it? What's his polling like now?
Well, it's funny, you know, about 5 months ago, he was on a real roll. His approval ratings were high. He was talking about economic reform. He was talking about improving relations in Asia. Abe's assassination was a bit of a game changer for the party. And I think that Prime Minister Kishida's numbers are at best in the low 40s. Many recent polls show him to be in the 30s. And this is kind of the danger zone for Japanese prime ministers. Most Japanese prime ministers last about 1 year. And when your approval ratings are in the 30s or low 40s, that's a terrible sign for the longevity of your government. So Prime Minister Kishida right now is really struggling.
And presumably economic considerations, you know, weigh into the whole polling element here. And we understand that the Prime Minister has instructed the government to come up with an economic stimulus package by the end of this month. A little too late?
Well, I think one of the things people are upset about is less the amount of money being spent and more, you know, is this all you've got? I mean, Japan has spent the last 30 years, you know, stimulus package. There's been very little done to retool the economy, to increase competitiveness, to increase wages. And I think many Japanese are saying, great, you're going to throw more money at the problem. What are you changing? It's really a matter of, you know, rearranging the chairs on a sinking ship, if you will. And so I think people are looking at the political environment saying, isn't the time you rolled up your sleeves and did something, not just throw money at the problem? The Bank of Japan has done a great deal. There's not a lot more the Bank of Japan can do to stimulate the economy while China is, you know, China's having its own problems, but generally China's racing ahead. South Korea is finding its groove. Japan is kind of walking in place because politicians continue to throw stimulus packages at the economy, but they're not getting under the hood and changing things.
So, William, let's discuss that point a little bit more. What is causing this lethargy in terms of reforming the economic situation in Japan? Is it just because the powers that be are so used to doing things currently and that there is no will to make that change? Or is it just due to the fact that it's the same leaders again and again?
Well, it's actually a bit of both. I mean, I think that Japan is really a one-party state. You know, I think Singapore admits it, but Japan pretends that it is a multi-party democracy. It really is a one-party state. We've had the same party in charge for the most part for 55 years. And I think they have a certain way of doing things, and they're reluctant to change. And I think the problem is that Japan has had so much success in the past that this ruling party seems to think that, well, we're only one stimulus package away from Japan returning to the magic of the 1980s, which is not going to happen. And so it's basically complacency, it's fear of change. And I think in many ways, the political establishment, they're worried about upsetting the political order. Meantime, they're not looking at the fact that change, that Asia is changing around them. You know, Indonesia is creating more unicorn, tech unicorns than Japan is, and we're walking in place here.
And William, let's take a shift over to, I guess, the broader region. We did see the U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris visit Japan and South Korea last week. What would you say are the key takeaways from her trip?
Well, three, China. You know, I think basically the Biden administration was reminded that, you know, the China question looms large over all they do. I mean, I think President Trump in his 4 years had a disastrous policy towards China. He raised taxes on Americans to try to change China's behavior. It didn't really happen. And I think that the Biden-Harris team, they're trying to figure out a way forward. The first thing they need to do is remove the tariffs that Trump put on China. The problem is when you do that, the Republicans in the U.S. call you soft on China. So they're reluctant to do that. And so, you know, in many ways, they're trying to find a new way forward for the U.S. and China. It's not happening. And the Taiwan issue, of course, looms large. So I think, you know, Kamala Harris came to the region to remind North Asia that the U.S. stands with you. But generally, her problems in China remain unresolved. And I think in many ways, that's the Biden administration's big challenge for the next year or two.
Interesting you say it's China, because the partner that seems most affronted is North Korea, you know, with all these ballistic missile tests taking place. What's the likelihood of North Korea now carrying out a nuclear test? And what are the implications of that?
Well, pretty high. I think this is another Trump failure because, you know, while Trump was writing love letters to Kim Jong-un, he was giving North Korea kind of cover to accelerate its nuclear program. North Korea now is more nuclear than ever, and they're feeling a bit, you know, a bit ignored. You know, Prime Minister, rather, President Biden is not giving Kim Jong-un summit meetings, photo ops. He's not writing him love letters. So Kim Jong-un has been a bit spoiled, if you will, by the Trump administration. So I think, unfortunately, the odds of a nuclear test are actually pretty high in the next couple of months. So, you know, North Asia will be on high alert. I still don't think people in South Korea, though, generally fear, you know, a direct attack from North Korea. But it is something that always hovers over the region. And it's a problem that's not going away anytime soon.
William, thanks as always for the chat. That was William Pezet, columnist with Nikkei Asia. He's a journalist based in Tokyo, giving us his take on some of the developments happening over in Japan as well as South Korea. A lot to discuss there.
Shaz, if I was lonely, would you write me a love letter?
Do you want a love letter, Philip?
I do. I would want one every day, like what Trump did with
Even
North Korea.
Even if it's from the leader of North Korea. But anyway, talking about North Korea, I mean, they do have this habit of timing their weapons test to political events, right? So clearly this was cleverly timed, as well as the fact that Kamala Harris wasn't the only one arriving to South Korea, because the USS Ronald Reagan aircraft carrier group was also there for joint drills. So it was perfect timing for him.
It's very timely because, as William Pesce was saying, right, China. This October is also very consequential for China, especially. They're going to their Congress, their convention, I think, to reaffirm President Xi's leadership. So is the US going to come into the region and kind of poke its fingers everywhere in this very momentous period over at China?
So there is a sort of speculation that North Korea could be timing their nuclear test for sometime during the October Chinese CCP event, as well as before the midterm elections in November. They're kind of looking at ways to, I suppose, ensure that attention
remains. Is it like, hello, don't forget, I still exist?
And this is very interesting because China does not want, you know, any nuclear test to take place. I think that's the challenge they have also with Russia, right, with these threats of nuclear tests. China's position is very clear. clear they are very much against any use of nuclear weapons in this case. So I don't know how this test by North Korea is going to help its position or relationship with China moving forward.
7:47 in the morning, we're heading into some messages. And when we come back, we will discuss what SMEs want from Budget 2023. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.